Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of multiple different galaxies all at once, yes, a multiverse episode, this is the Four Center podcast feed presents Other Center. In this particular episode is Cues of the Other. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsok, and I read an article that whole thing is dead, Joseph. I read it.
The multiverse?
Just that whole thing.
No, oh, okay.
Tapes for you all. That's what I read. That's what I read on the internet. Mm. I heard a director worked on two projects at the same time.
What? Wow. Impossible. And we are lucky to be joined today by our third partner, whose name is
Jennifer Landa. And I watched several TikTok videos about it. And I have a lot of thoughts, actually. It was a very interesting article.
Man, I miss talking about some of our pop culture worlds and our pop culture stories. But there have been a lot of just stories about the business that I've been excited to dive back into when the strike blissfully ends. And yes, the premature death of the multiverse is up there.
Yes.
But we have lots of good cues. And by lots, I mean two. We've got two really meaty, great questions from patrons on Patreon. Before we get to that, we want to let you know that, as always, today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. You can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, MP3 player, or any other device you can make talk to you. The recommendation for this episode is the same as our deep dive episode earlier this week. It is a book called What I Really Want to Do Is Direct. It was written in or published in 2020, written by the director Ken Kwapis, who has done an amazing amount of different interesting projects. It's a mix of autobiography that talks about his passion for filmmaking, about his experiences working on lots and lots of different kinds of projects, and really practical tips for what does it mean to actually be a good film director. And after watching just lots of people on social media fight about who is the better director without ever, you know, making an effort to determine what makes someone a good director, it's really great to spend some time with this book that really dives deep into what does that mean? What do you actually do? So if you're interested in any of that, you can check out this audiobook. To download your free audiobook today, you can go to audibletrial.com/ForeCenter. One more time, that's audibletrial.com/ForeCenter for your free audiobook. So that is our first A down. We move on to our second A, which is ask. Ken, do you want to handle the ask?
Yes, we'd like to ask you to consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps, and sometimes we need the focus on it. Quite frankly, Joseph, I think you were right when you suggested this first time. I forgot that was a thing, that it was important. It's important to the algorithm. Oh, the algorithm, the capital A that we're all chasing. But it also feels nice, too, when you leave a good review. So if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts and you have the ability or the desire to go leave a review, five stars, four, even I'll take four stars, five stars, type some words out that are nice. It helps. It really helps the show as we continue to move forward in this uncertain time for the podcast industry as a whole. So we would like to see if you would do that. That's our ask. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts.
That is a great ask. And thank you to those of you who have done it. I've just been getting back from traveling, and yeah, I can't wait to check and see how we're doing. But we are now ready to get on to the main business of Cues of the Others, Cues of the Other, which is providing some A's for your cues. Our first question comes to us from Chris Williamson. And Chris says, hey, Jennifer, Ken, and Joseph. I've been loving everything from Other Center and look forward to its continuation, especially the cues of the other. Some of the questions have become great icebreakers in my classroom to start the day to get the kids talking and thinking. My question relates to one of the courses I teach. I am a high school history teacher who also teaches law and criminal justice courses as electives. One of the activities we do that always gets students excited is our research project into specific criminals in American history. So my question is this. What do you think we as a society, why do you think we as a society have such a fascination with true crime? What is it with our obsession with serial killers, mobsters, and other criminals? Interested in hearing your thoughts, and if you even have any true crime stories or individuals you are particularly interested in. This was a fun one to research for myself. Like, big picture opinions about our fascination with crime, but also like, who's my favorite awful person in history? Great. So let's dive in. Jennifer, for the big picture part of this question, do you have theories? Why do you think we as a society are so fascinated with true crime?
I have a lot of theories. This is going to turn into Murder Center because I have thought about this for many, many years. I've done a lot of book reading, movie watching, you know, true crime stuff on Annie over the years. I think, okay, so big picture, I think there's a lot of reasons why. Number one, it could be that it's like the most, these are some of the most horrific crimes that the everyday person could never imagine committing, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's like a wild robbery that happened and they were able to rob a bank. That's why you see a lot of these heist movies, right? It's like, oh, they pulled off the impossible. Wouldn't that be amazing to suddenly have millions and millions of dollars, right? Mm. So it's like these like almost like these fantasies. Now then you have the other side of it, where it's like the darkest part of humanity, where people are like, how could somebody do this horrific crime? How did nobody see that they were going down that road? Mm. And for me personally, it was like, oh, I want to learn the psychology behind it to spot that in other people. Because so many of these, you watch these documentaries and the neighbor's like, I never knew. He seemed like such a nice boy, right? But with all of these people, which we'll get in depth in a minute here, but like all these people, there are signs 100% throughout their childhood, whether it's torturing animals or being mean to other children or not having any sort of empathy towards others, right? There's a lot of signs, and it's easy. I wouldn't say it's easy to spot, but it's like, oh, okay, something may lead to these horrific acts. There's always like a breadcrumb trail. It's just, did the people close to them pick up on it and really like sound the alarm that maybe something was going to happen?
Right. And like, what is the right kind of alarm to sound of?
That's the other. I mean, sometimes some of these people, like they've gotten treatment, they've gotten help, mental health things, interventions, and it's still, it doesn't, you know, there's only so much you can do for a person. And that is really scary. I also was thinking about, I'm so sorry. This is like,
please, I feel like we struck gold. I love it. Keep.
This is something that I was thinking about. We went to the Getty Center and my daughter bought this book on mythical creatures, beasts, monsters. I found this book fascinating. And the reason why is if you look at all the different folklore from all of around the world, you can kind of, I wonder, maybe somebody, I'm sure somebody's talked about this, is some of these monsters were people that had, some sort of mental health crises, right? Like, I feel like we as humans want to make sense of the things that don't make sense. And that's another thing with a lot of these, especially like serial killers, you're just like, why? Everyone wants to know the why. And unfortunately, there is no why sometimes why people do these heinous crimes. It's just from severe trauma or the impulses or whatever it is, or brain things going on in their chemistry, right? And there is no why. There is nothing really that could have stopped them. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Well, okay, I'll stop there.
No, I love it. And I think for me, that is the biggest thing is the desire for comprehension. And again, I think it's one of those things that like you can put on your like studious hat and really be like, I am doing an investigation. But I think just like when you're, 15 and you first hear about the Manson family and you can't verbalize why you're fascinated, I think it is this natural pull toward comprehension. And I think what's most fascinating to me is, Jennifer, what you're saying about serial killers is this human condition to sort of long to understand that maybe something that just can't be, it was trauma or it's chemistry. And this person doesn't have empathy. Like they don't have it, and there's not an answer for it. But then when you start to pull in things like, say, a mobster, well, maybe some mobsters, especially like enforcers are, basically serial killers. But then you get to people who are like, well, they're can you justify being a mobster, and there's those different levels of comprehending the darkness are fascinating, all the way from this person, experienced trauma or has a brain chemistry issue and that's that, versus like someone who's like, my people have been treated unfairly. Everybody, including the government and the cops, are killing people to get what they want. What's so wrong if I do it? Then you get into this like other end of the spectrum of, our love of mobsters and pop culture and movies about them, of almost searching for like, can we find a justification? Can we find not just a rationalization, but like, I feel like a lot of Scorsese films are about like, you don't actually want to be this. This doesn't work out. And yet you get that thing where people are kind of attracted to them because like, are the mobsters the bad guys? Just like a fascinating spectrum when you're talking about crime, from serial killers to, was this person just protecting their own family? Like, Ken, how do you, what do you feel is the attraction?
This is fantastic. This is gold. Thank you, Chris, for this question. And by the way, I love that he's, Chris, you're starting your class with some of the questions that we answer here. That's fantastic. Yeah, first of all, I want to acknowledge one of the things, like the wave of true crime being popular is something that is an interesting discussion point itself. And I think you're both right where I go to about learning, right? Or the comprehension you talked about, Joseph, is definitely part of it. The study of human nature. And I think it's, as you've watched true crime podcasts take over, I think some of them are great. Grace listens to them a lot. I think some of them aren't. I think some of them correctly and successfully chase the rhythm of the world. Mm-hmm. But that's fine. But like My Favorite Murder, I actually really, when we listen to them in the car, I think they're great. And I think they've changed and mature as both performers turned podcasters who realize what they were talking about, some of the issues they were talking about. So there's some deeper issues to it. And I've stopped doing, I think we've talked about this before. And Joseph, I definitely remember having a conversation with you off air of just like, it's so easy to get up there and be, and I've seen comics do it of women, why are you so obsessed with true crime podcasts? You know, all these horrible murders. And Grace has said it plainly. And Jen, I absolutely want your thoughts on this because it's your perspective that I value here of, we're obsessed with it because we're all afraid of that happening to us every single time we leave the goddamn house. Mm-hmm. So studying why it might happen and Grace has said and others, more importantly, what will happen after it happens to me? Will my murder be solved? Will my killer be found? Will anything? It's not just a cute morbid obsession. It's a striking reality. And I always say, hey, you know, guys, if you don't want your lady to listen to the true crime podcast, stop murdering people. Might be the way to stop. But also, so Jed, I will kick it to you in a second. But then I have a lot of thoughts on just trying to wrap your brain around something you can't imagine, or maybe even have kind of, you know, I'm not saying we've all wanted to be killers, but like a flash of anger. What stops your anger going from honking your horn to getting out and punching someone, right? Mm-hmm. What is that line? Mm-hmm. And this is all about the line, but Jen, I don't know, but the big picture on the true crime stuff, I'm sure resonates with you as well. I would think.
Yes. I 100% agree with Grace, because that was why initially I was so drawn to it. It was like survival. You're like, how can I spot the quote unquote bad people? Mm-hmm. And here's what I have learned in my personal life, as well as from my research. These certain criminals, they work very hard to present a perfect exterior. Often, I'm talking about a specific type of person, and this is where it becomes challenging. Where you think, if I watch all the true crime stuff and I read all the books, I know all the psychology, I will be able to spot a predator. Mm-hmm. And the thing about predators is that they can be charming, like Ted Bundy. Mm-hmm. Can be the church going, you know, mm-hmm. father figure who you believe, and these people will keep up these appearances for decades. Mm-hmm. But what I have also learned is that oftentimes the people who are the closest to them might have some doubts, but even still, like, you can never know what is going on inside someone's head. Mm-hmm. And so these people oftentimes have lived a double life for so long, mm-hmm. that they are able to slip in and out of it very easily. They're able to lie. And unfortunately, many of these people are psychopaths or sociopaths. And so when you do confront them about their crimes, what they have done, and I have had firsthand experience, and let me tell you, there is confronting someone on a crime that you know that they have done, and they look you dead in the eye and they lie to your face. And for a moment, you might actually believe them. Mm-hmm. That there is nothing that can be, you can't predict that. You can't, that's why I think true crime is fascinating and also terrifying, and why I haven't been enjoying it. I haven't been consuming it as much, mm-hmm. as I realized there is no way to really spot some of these predators. Mm-hmm. It's awful. It's absolutely awful. If there's a documentary that was on HBO years ago, I think it's called like The Iceman Cometh. Mm. And that's an example of somebody who, he doesn't lie, but the way he talks about the murders that he did and the way that he did it, he does it in such like a conversational, cold way, no emotion.
Yeah, it's a Tuesday. I murdered someone.
Yeah. Yeah. It's chilling. Mm-hmm. But I think the scarier people are the people that are your next door neighbor that you don't know are predators that seem like a father knows best type.
Yeah.
And you don't know what they're doing. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I have any sort of like serial killer radar. I totally agree with you with you can't know, and people mask it very well. But I think this is one of the reasons that I'm always more comfortable around people who make jokes or like horror movies and sort of acknowledge the darkness of the world.
Yes.
People who want to put on an absolutely perfect, pristine, sometimes judgmental to the rest of the world. I had some experiences, thankfully not with serial killers, but with people who really put on that, like, our life is perfect. And that terrifies me.
You are 100% right.
It's almost, yes. It's so often masking something, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And to be clear, I've never confronted a serial killer. Not that type of crime. Not that type of crime. But you know, I mean, yeah.
Well, we are all living by the grace of just hoping the world functions normally, you know. Mm-hmm. When you walk into a place, there's, you know, this, there's only so many things I can do as a security director to keep you safe. I have to rely on the goodwill of humanity.
Yep.
And hope
that it's there. Yeah. Yeah. I think this is something I was fascinated with as a teen, and then have only continued to be more interested in, is I think a lot of us encounter in life people who have empathy issues because of trauma. I think I've interacted with some people who are borderline on the sociopath thing, and it is from trauma or chemistry. It's not a choice. It is not a choice, in my opinion. And the classes I took many years ago in sociology. So I've always been fascinated with like the people who are making a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where it gets into this sort of like the stuff with, you know, maybe mobsters or somebody who does fly into a jealous rage or whatever, and is capable of stopping themselves and chooses not to. Jennifer, do you have any thoughts or feelings about that sort of, you've been really focusing on the serial killer. How do you feel about the person who has empathy, knows they're causing another person pain, but lets the anger, the need for power, overcome it?
I think that those are the types of characters that we see in the movies. Obviously, they're based on real life, and that's why people enjoy watching those kinds of stories. And I think why, like the gangster movies, the mobster movies, the Bonnie and Clyde's, or the Scarface, Goodfellas, whatever it is, it's like there seems like there's a higher purpose to what they're doing, or like you were talking about before, protecting their family, or you know, like now they, like there's also Americans especially, like seeing like the power, the wealth that these people have. That's where like the glamorization comes in. Or even if you watch like the you know, the, I watched this movie with Tom Cruise, it was like, I think based on like the Pablo Escobar stuff. That was fascinating. It's like, wow, like this is like wild. And I can have more empathy for people like that. I do not have any empathy towards people that harm children. That is where I draw the line, and I cannot. I understand all the traumas and things like that happen throughout people's lives. But yeah, so I definitely will be much more like, wow, how did that mobster get to that point? Or, you know, what led them to that? Or, you know, their economic circumstances, why they felt like they had to do this. And yeah, so I get it. I understand that. But there are certain crimes that I will never accept or forgive.
Yeah, no, understandable. And I think that for me, like a lot of the mobster stories are about worldview of it's a dog eat dog world, and everybody is out for themselves. I'm not doing anything different than everybody else is. And
right.
And I I've known a lot of people with that rationalization, you know, but if you take that to its logical conclusion, it gets to a very dark place very quickly.
Mm-hmm. I actually knew a kid, and this is the thing about like gangs specifically, like people don't understand if you're not familiar, like kids join gangs because you kind of have no choice. Mm-hmm. Like I had a friend in middle school, the sweetest kid, you know, great student. And I literally went through the process of him where he's like, I'm going to have to join a gang. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, you're not a gangbanger. Like, you don't have to join a gang. He's like, no, I have to. Mm-hmm. I am going to get like, you know, beat up daily, harassed. Mm. Like, my family might get hurt. I have to. And so like over the course of that year, I was like literally in like, I was in seventh grade. And I saw him and he joined a gang and it was shocking. And it was so, so sad. And there was nothing, you know, glorifying about it. The mm-hmm. reality of why kids have to join gangs and like, mm-hmm. oh, it's just terrible. But anyways, that's a side note. Yeah.
I really agree with you about the arc of the true crime podcasts that mm-hmm. I think especially like, you know, my favorite murder is it was mm-hmm. so took off and is the genesis of a lot of it. And mm-hmm. I think that came from such a sincere place and it is about women taking back the narrative, but yeah, they're just some thumbnails that bum me out where people look like real happy and, you know, mm-hmm. confetti mm-hmm. going off in the background. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Now we're dancing close to.
Yeah, yeah,
not, you know, respecting that. But beyond true crime for you, what is what draws you personally to being fascinated with crime or criminals?
You both have said some wonderful things. And the area of focus I go to, I was trying to think, you know, I've been saying for this entire year, I love my docs and I love watching documentaries and especially events, tragedies. You know, I've watched, you know, I talked about the 9/11 docs. I don't watch it out of like morbid care. How and why and what would I do? And that's part of what fuels it. Mm. But my area of interest, I was trying to think, I was like, all right, this is a great question. It would be organized crime. I don't love the glorification of it. Like all due respect to you, Mr. Scorsese, you're one of our all time legends. I'm not drawn to any of his films. I'd rather watch Someone in Capes. Sorry. But he's a legend. I'm not going to have, you know, no need to pick sides, but right. Like I've told the story. I arrested Henry Hill one night, Ray Liotta's character. I arrested him at our mall and
no.
Yeah. 100%. He pushed one of our officers and he had a drinking problem in his later years, probably his whole life. He lived in that part of the Valley and he was just kind of known to LAPD. He'd show up places and, but we didn't know. And he kept telling me, I'm Henry Hill. That's the first guy Billy the Kid was in Young Gun. Mm. And I was like, sure, I remember Billy the Kid shot. Yeah, I totally get you, dude, because I'm just thinking this dude's line. He's showing me his tattoos and it was Henry Hill. Because I didn't see Goodfellas.
Did he just start doing the dialogue?
He's literally telling, I'm Henry Hill. Here's my tattoo from the army. Don't you know who I am? And I'm literally going, I remember when Billy Kid shot you in the outhouse. And my friends from the Schmoes world were like, dude. And I was like, I've never seen Goodfellas. Like I don't know. Sorry, I don't know. So I'm not obsessed with, and by the way, I don't say anyone who likes those movies glorifying the mobsters and all that kind of stuff, but like the love of the Sopranos, there is kind of a, because there's such a code, right? You can mm-hmm. watch a mobster cook a pasta sauce and it's a great scene at a Coppola picture and there's family and there's honor and there's code and you're right, Joseph, there's so much of that. So I'm fascinated with that. I mentioned before, one of my all-time favorite books is Public Enemies by Brian Boru, which eventually became a major motion picture. And it's the 33-34 crime wave. It is the Bonnie and Clyde. It is John Dillinger. It is all those gangs, those crime outfits, and then the formation of the FBI. And I'm fascinated with that because of how that speaks about the time. Mm-hmm. A lot of what you're talking about, Joseph, have mentioned about, you know, what caused them and what choice do they make and why. And then what that did going forward and how that was spun, I should say, out of control in a way of law and order versus not solving the issues that were actually going on. And also there was just some really bad guys. And that's a thing. I always say crime is real. And there are criminals that do bad things for bad sakes, but also the system and also how America was formed during that time, focusing on America in that time period. That's why I'm obsessed a little bit with like the old West, so to speak, but like there's the bigger issues of what happened and some of the stories that we weren't really shared as we were growing up here in our country. You know, we just watched how the West was won and we thought that was a fact. But how we formed this and how corporations came in and the titans of industry said, look at this. I'm fascinated with how we built all this. And that period of time, 33-34, where you think of it as somewhat modern era, I think the dividing line is post-World War II. I think it was still the Wild Wild West there. And to study the docs, to read those books, I cannot recommend that book enough, Public Enemies by Brian Boroch. It's gripping and it's tense. It no wonder it got optioned into a major motion picture because it reads like it. Because it's based on real stuff and it's just crazy to think that, and a lot of what you're saying, you know, of it just was a foregone conclusion that this officer is probably on the take, that judge is probably on the take. I mean, that's just the way it was. That's the way it was, and you know, and how do we move forward from that? So there is a need to modernize, there is a need to change, but then people come in and take that disruption and use it for their own power. That's what I'm fascinated with, that area, where if you're talking true crime.
Yeah, you're talking about some great stuff, and I think goes along with Jennifer too, of the difference between, you know, somebody who's like, no, I have issues and I like violence and I want to shoot up this bank versus what are the social anxieties, what are poverty, no other choice, you know, facing constant brutality from cops that lead people to choices, and trying to separate that narrative versus, you know, I've been talk about it more once the strike is done, but I've been watching more pre-code movies and just the how much people underestimate the impact of the Hays Code demanding that law and order and America be promoted as positive and criminals are always defeated, and making everything just very simple and black and white.
Yeah.
It really helped sort of sell the story of, this is what America has always been. Here's good, here's bad, period, you know? Mm-hmm. And fascinating. Mm-hmm. Jennifer, do you have, as Chris is asking, a specific criminal that you are fascinated by, or true crime story?
Not anymore. I have different criminal like genres, if you will. Mm-hmm. So I do like the mobster stories, history. I do like learning about crimes and things, that murder mysteries that happened in old Hollywood or during the 70s in particular. My dad always, as a reporter, talks about that time and how it was like a really terrifying time. And there were a lot of, you know, the Manson murders and the Night Stalker and all those things kind of happening around the same time, which was very terrifying for people. I think that's interesting. I used to watch the first 48. Mm-hmm. I would watch hours of that. Mm-hmm. And I stumbled upon that recently and I was like, how did I watch that show? It is so dark and so it is depressing. And you see them not catching these people who are murderers or rapists or whatever. Right. And it's just like, it's awful. It's awful. So what I've done now when I'm doing true crime or watching it, there's actually this great YouTuber. Her name is Bailey Sarian, and she does, what is it called? It's called Murder, Mystery, and Makeup. Mm. And what she does her makeup and she talks about this murder that she kind of researched, and she just basically tells the story. And there's something about, like, number one, it feels like she's telling it to a friend. And there's also like that buffer of, I don't want to say making it lighthearted, because she does not take anything lightly. Like she really does kind of like make comments about it. She covered this woman who like dismembered her boyfriend and then put his head in a bucket. So it was like a recent one. That was really dark. But it's like, it's interesting going back to the psychology of how does this happen? Why did this woman do that to her boyfriend? How did it get to that point? And so it's like she's kind of figuring it out along with you, the viewer. That's kind of how I consume it now. Otherwise, I just can't. I like to watch lighthearted things.
That makes good sense. For myself, a lot of people I knew, I think in high school, it was like elective, before the term true crime was true crime, an elective was probably something like criminal studies or whatever. I think the teacher was real lazy and just gave everyone the same Manson family book. And I remember people being sort of like fascinated in that way. That's very understandable for young people to be fascinated by. But I remember them all being sort of like trying to solve the mystery of the Manson family and Charles Manson. And I think as he wanted, gifting him this romanticism of what dark powers he untap. And I remember at some point just being like, I know the basics. I don't know why I did this to myself. I'm just like, I'm going to sit down and read the Wikipedia page for the Manson family murders and just be like, this guy's a fool and an egomaniac and the crimes were poorly planned. You know, we've given them this romanticism that they don't deserve. It's just horror. He's a bumbling fool in horror. And I think that kind of, I understand why people are fascinated with serial killers and want to understand, but I have a real resistance to romanticizing them in any way, because I kind of went through that personal experience with seeing so many young people romanticize the Manson family. So that's what I'm not interested in. the specific mobster that I'm fascinated with is Sam Giancana. Because he pops up in lots of nonfiction and fiction. He had connections to Sinatra. He had connections to the Kennedy family. He was possibly involved in the CIA recruiting the mafia for the Bay of Pigs attempted assassination of Castro. He's eventually, like many of these mobsters, killed suspiciously close to a Senate hearing. Or I don't know if it was a Senate hearing. It was a hearing about the CIA and the mafia working together. But I've read about him again and again in books about the entertainers I love from that era of Sammy Davis Jr. and Dean Martin. He was just a reality. He's going to come to the shows. He's going to date these women. He's just there. And lots of people who were like back in the day, like, I never wanted to do anything with the mob. They owned every club. So if you were an entertainer, you rub shoulders with them, period. You did.
Comedy, man. Comedy. Comedy is all stuff. Oh, my God. It's crazy.
Yeah. But then he exists in this really specific moment. Like you're talking about, Ken, of like, you know, the 30s and the oncoming of the New Deal is a really interesting time. The 60s and the Kennedy assassination is this, you know, often talked about where America lost its innocence. And I think a part of that is figures like Sam Giancana, who is in this triangle of stories that are about different kinds of power.
Mm-hmm.
And one is the legitimate power of the government, political power. One is the undeniable power of pop culture. We can kind of laugh at it, but, you know, Sinatra had power. And then the old school power of the mafia, which is just sheer violence at the end of the day of, you got a grocery store, give us 10 bucks or it's your kneecaps with a baseball bat. That's the power of just violence. And it was this weird, time where I think the world could start to see that the veil between these different kinds of power was pretty thin. And he's just in the center of that. So that's why I'm fascinated with him is same reason as you, Ken, the sort of the it's not him as a person. He's pretty easy to figure out as a person.
Yeah.
It's his place in history.
Yeah. That's fascinating stuff. Yeah. I was just looking as you're talking, looking at that's going to be a Wikipedia read tonight when I go to bed.
Oh yeah. And his Wikipedia is pretty thin compared to some of the things that, Yeah, and like depending on different sources, he was one of the figures that was asked by the Kennedy family through intermediaries to put pressure on Chicago to make sure Kennedy got the nomination.
Yes. Yeah.
And then and then Robert Kennedy decides, I'm going to go after the mafia. So it's there's that famous clip of Robert Kennedy grilling Sam Giancana about why he doesn't want to answer questions. Are you just going to sit there and giggle and saying, you know, I thought only little girls giggle, which is a sentiment I don't agree with the gender politics of, but it's a historical document. It is pretty fascinating if you believe all of that, to use the power of the mafia to get legitimate power and then turn around it's just fascinating.
Well, I just realized one last thing I wanted to say was that I used to consume the Serial podcast, which I feel like really kind of created a boom with the true crime genre in podcasts specifically. And I think the reason why that one was so successful, the very first season of it, was because the journalists were revealing their findings. Like, it felt like real time. Like you were investigating this case and trying to figure out if this young man had been wrongfully accused and arrested. Did he really do this? And so they were every week or every episode, they were like putting the pieces together. And as a result, I believe he was just released from prison. Like, he was exonerated. They realized that it was not him. He did not do it. And that feels like a huge win. And there was something really exciting about the possibility to potentially like right or wrong, right? Like, let's make this right for the victim. Like, let's find the person that really did this to her. And if it is this young man, maybe we can find out answers. But these were like NPR journalists. They did tons of research and they were involved with a lawyer. Like, it was his own thing. It was not just some, you know, person in their home doing it. You know what I mean?
Like, just, there was a difference. YouTube show. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. That's why I think it was so successful.
Yeah. I think it's a great point to wrap up this part of the conversation is a great thing to be obsessed with is the victims and victims, including victims of violence and victims of wrongful imprisonment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any final thoughts from you, Ken, before we take a break?
No, we could go on forever. A true crime center. But from this point of view, it's all fascinating stuff. There's the horror side of it. A little bit of fun of just the history of it. If you're trying to look for true history, it's all part of it. So a great question, Chris, and keep leading your class in these wonderful icebreakers.
Yeah, no, we'll try to come up with some good icebreakers. Thank you very much, Chris. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
And we are back for cues of the other. We have one more cue to provide some A's for. That first one really, really set us off on a tangent. So we'll see how deep we go for this one. This is from Douglas Dubois. Douglas says, what is a skill that you'd love to master, but you've never quite been able to pull off or put sufficient time into? Douglas, thank you for including the sufficient time part of that. They give us an out as well. Ken, is there something you've been doing lots of different things? You've been stretching yourself, but is there something that you have not been able to pull off or find the time to attempt to pull off?
I almost pulled this off in like 1997. And it's upsetting me that I didn't. And it's not too late, I'll say this, but I also don't know much like how the force works, if I can reference that. I don't know if I have the midichlorians to master it, but that's another question. It's a guitar. Got this music out right now with this musical project, The Moon Agers. We got more songs on the way. Can't wait for all of you to hear. I'm really proud of this stuff we've got coming and what's out there now. But I always joke, I have no musical talent. I almost did, man. I had two chords learned. I had a really bad acoustic, it's like a really bad acoustic guitar. And I was doing it every day. And this is pre-YouTube, right? So I couldn't just put on a course. And I should have gone to maybe a coach or a teacher if I really wanted to do it. But I was doing my finger exercises. I had some friends around me who were helping me when they could. And I don't know why I stopped, because I was progressing. My hands are getting stronger. I can figure out how to do it. I just maybe don't have the mind for, you know, I can't read music. I'm also tone deaf. Like, that's not a joke. Mm-hmm. You talked about that, Joseph. Like, no, I don't know what is what. I just stopped and I moved to LA and it never happened. You know, I just never happened. And so here it is 25 years later. I'm working on songs from the lyric side. I'm like, man, I wish I had done that. I wish I had really stuck with it. So still time, I know. Why I stopped 25 years ago, I'm going to have to analyze why. I know, you know, sufficient time is a big part of this question, Douglas. But
I relate to that. I did start on the guitar and it hurt my fingers a lot and I got frustrated and I had no support. That would have been swell. Jennifer, what is a skill for you that you'd love to master?
There's so many. I can think of crocheting. I can think of, I love to sew, but I would love to take some classes again. That was really enjoyable. But I think the biggest thing would be like you can music. So I played piano for 14 years, but I was a classically trained pianist. And so I tried to play jazz piano. It is so difficult. Mm. Like a ballerina trying to do hip hop. It just doesn't, it's so hard. Mm. And so I would have to take lessons. I had a teacher who was very patient with me. I would love to go back to him and have him really work with me. And then I would, of course, have to practice, going back to our other episode of setting a goal, keeping up that work ethic, practicing every day. Yeah. That's what I would do.
Well, maybe we can all get together and start a really rough band.
Drums, a guitarist who knows the G chord, and a piano player who's doing something in her own way. That's wonderful.
Can only do Mozart.
I don't know if I have the right rock beat to go with Mozart, but we can try. One of the things that was really fun for me is I was always drawn to music. I wanted to play guitar. I couldn't do that. Drumming worked out because my dad was a drummer and was able to teach me, and I fell in love with it and all that. I think for me, the biggest one ever is singing. I talked about it on a recent episode, so I won't go on about it. I love singing. I think I have a decent voice. I have good vibrato. I have good breath control from theater stuff, all that. Not real good at recognizing the notes, but that does not come to me naturally. And I think my range is really limited. So that is a part of it is I might, there may be some notes I can hear, but I can't actually hit. But I think with a lot of time and a lot of very patient training, I could probably get better at singing. Mm-hmm. But this summer for the short film Nightmare Adorable, I wanted to do the music myself because my wife has got this keyboard, and part of it was time, part of it was money, but part of it was also just kind of wanting to scratch that itch of like, can I make music? And you know, I mostly wanted ambient music, so it wasn't, you know, really about writing, you know, a rock song or a specific melody. A lot of it could just be like weird noises. And that was so much fun. That was so pleasing to just be like, what sound do I need to create this? And then when I got to the point where it's like, okay, I have a couple parts of this movie that need more, that it can't just be a chord or a weird sound effect. Actually taking the time to record multiple different parts and then combine them in Audacity. That was great. I'd love to have more time to put into that. So singing and music in general. And then the second one I'll throw out there is fencing. Yeah, I would love to do that. I needed to take I can't remember what credit I was trying to get in college, but there was a fencing class, but it was at like 7 a.m. and I did not live on campus.
Oh, no.
And I signed up for it. I was like, this is going to be great. I'm going to learn how to fence. And I had to get up at, you know, just a beastly hour. And I had never been to any of the sort of gym buildings at the University of Minnesota. And, you know, I got there at like 6:55, bleary, freezing. And I couldn't find the door to the gym. And I was just like standing there, like 6:59 in the cold, being like, I'm going to drop this class. So it's definitely one of those like shameful memories of you should have maybe tried to find the door to the gym and not let that stop you.
Mm. Those things you look back, but yeah, I get you.
Yeah. Any other dreams of, we're talking about kind of some bigger ones that do require a lot of time. Is there any like smaller thing that you want to do, Ken?
I'd love to get back into cooking. I've always had a cooking adjacent approach to life. Like I wish I could do it better. Then I started doing better. And then I had did an interview with our pal Steven Ellis from the Black Series Rebels guys years ago on the Knapsack Files about cooking. He was cooking at home. This is before the pandemic. And he had some great advice. He's like, you just nothing matters. Figure it out. Just toss something in there. Does that spice work? Be free. And once I started doing that, I had a lot more fun. Then the pandemic hit and I started cooking more. I was starting to cook the like vegan stuff for Grace and I loved it. And then all of a sudden I just stopped again. And some of it was like, I just felt like I only knew five things. And I have a list of things I want to learn to do cooking wise. I don't know. Baking's not much of an interest. I do enjoy the sweets. It's probably a dangerous thing if I learn how to bake my own sweets. But yeah, that's a little minor thing because I need to eat every day and I need to save money. And it helps when you buy the ingredients that make a meal versus, you know, the rising prices of frozen foods and stuff. So.
Yeah. Jennifer, you mentioned crochet. You have a ton of different crafting skills. Are there other things like crochet that you want to learn?
You know, now that Ken said cooking, I too want to become a better cook. Mm. My husband is really good at cooking, and he's good at cooking because, number one, he enjoys it, and his mom kind of taught him a little bit. But like, he looks at our refrigerator, and I'm like, there's nothing here. He will whip up the most amazing meal. We call it like refrigerating, and he'll just put it all together with leftovers and spices that we have, and he gets joy out of that. I find that to be like a daunting task. So I would maybe want to take some classes. And, you know, it's kind of like the improvisation, that jazz spirit my husband has that I have a more difficult time with. Right.
Yeah.
But I think if you can just keep trying, supposedly that's the key, is you just try and taste.
Right. Yep.
But I want the end result to be good.
No, I'm with you. I don't have the time or the patience to become a good cook. I'm trying to get a little bit better and then maybe master something other than frozen pizza and macaroni and cheese. I think at some point, maybe do that.
Yeah.
The other skill that I'm working on that's a very small one is keeping plants alive, which I've never really had a ton of interest in, but Sarah's had plants on our balcony and a couple inside, and we picked one up at Descanso Gardens, and we both just kind of forgot about it, and it died because hey, you got to take care of them. And I, for some reason, that one just really got me, and I was like, no, we're buying another one at Descanso Gardens, a little one, and I'm gonna put it somewhere I can see it every day, so I remember it. And suddenly I feel like, you know, the kid in high school who's given the egg to take care of, where like, I'm obsessed with that one plant now. And sometimes it really is just like, you know, getting hooked and caring, right? And saying, this is really important to me. And like, I don't have a green thumb and I don't want a garden, but I want to keep that one damn plant alive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, any final thoughts on this one?
No, I'm going to cook a dinner and then sit down and watch a true crime doc and just combine the episode into one act.
I am going to sing poorly in the shower while thinking about Sam Giancana. That's really upsetting. That's not a good wrap up. Jennifer, help us out. What's your wrap up?
Oh, I think the point is to just do it, right? Well, you can try, but basically, yeah, you just got to go for it.
Absolutely. Great thoughts to end on. Thank you, Douglas, for the question. Thank you, Chris, for the question. We've got a lot of great Patreon questions coming up. Thank you for everybody who has put one there. If you are on our Patreon and would like to add a question, scroll down our post. There's a picture of a statue of a bear reaching toward the sky because... It seemed inspirational. If you'd like to leave a question, you can leave a question under the picture of the bear. Ken, where can people find us?
Hey, we're on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Threads, Hive Social, if you're still there. We're not really there, but we're on there. You can support us there. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Podcast is available on a lot of different spots. iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. Just search, you'll find us. Merch still available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. You can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. We have an exclusive show over there every month for you. It used to be, it's still Will of the Force, but right now it's Will of the Other, because of what's going on. Check that out. It's all for you if you support. For our personal plugs and where you can find us, just search at Ken Napsok and go to my website. And I do want to highlight, I mentioned it here a couple times. It's been something I've mentioned for a couple weeks. Yeah, I co-wrote a song. It's out there. It's called Tell Me by the Moonagers. And more songs on the way that I'm really proud of. But do me a favor. Go listen on Spotify, Apple. No, that's all you got to do. You don't have to buy anything. You can go to Bandcamp and buy it if you want. But you don't have to buy anything. I don't care if you like the song or not. Just give me a listen. Just give me a chance. All right? Give me a chance. It might not be your style of music. It's jingly jangly rock and roll. But that's where you can find it. It's called The Moonagers. Look for us at all the spots to get your music. So excuse me, I'm choked up over my own hubris there. Jen, where can they find you?
You can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Jennifer Landa, TikTok at Jennifer Landa 1138, where I will be sharing, I don't know, things I enjoy doing, I suppose.
That's wonderful. I look forward to the next evolution. For myself, you can find me on all the social media at Joseph Scrimshaw. Blue Sky in particular seems to be picking up. So if you got an invite code and you can get your way over to Blue Sky, please find me there. At Joseph Scrimshaw is the handle. Everything else is on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. In particular, I want to highlight that the short horror film I worked on with many other awesome people that is called The Nightmare Adorable. It is playing at a horror movie fest in Las Vegas. That festival is called Sin City Horror Fest. The Nightmare Adorable in particular is playing on Saturday, December 2nd at 4 p.m. I'll be there and doing a Q&A afterwards. And you can get individual tickets to the block of shorts that The Nightmare Adorable is playing in. So if you're in Vegas or want to be in Vegas, come join me for that screening of The Nightmare Adorable. The link and all the information is on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. That is it. We have provided some A's to all the wonderful Q's. Thank you all.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.